Hi, everyone. This is Grace Cho from Entrepreneur. Today, I'm speaking with Rachel Wade. She's a New York-based interior designer known for reimagining tradition to create timeless, meaningful spaces. She grew up in Vermont, was greatly influenced by her father's creative approach, which you will hear about. And she has a way of really envisioning a space and making it a beautiful blend of textures, colors, and moods. Rachel's story is very interesting. She's a highly accomplished woman of many, many surprising talents, which I didn't know about until our conversation. So I hope you enjoy listening to Rachel's story, my friend who is a brilliant interior designer. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
It's such fun to talk to you.
Thanks.
I'm a huge fan of your design. It's just so rich and robust, and this is a question I like to ask all my guests right at the beginning. I always want to know about your background. So tell us, where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? And what did you study?
I grew up in Vermont, a very, very, very small town in Vermont. No sidewalks, no streetlights, really just a village. And I got out as fast as I could. I loved it, but I wanted something bigger always. I asked my parents if I could go to boarding school, and I did. In Connecticut. And then after boarding school, I went off to college and ended up at the University of Colorado in Boulder, Colorado. Mm. There I studied broadcast journalism and I used my degree exactly 0 days in my life. I graduated from Boulder, moved to Los Angeles, completely changed gears, but I loved it all. I just never used my degree.
Journalism? Wow.
I don't know why. It sounded fun and I loved it, but I quickly learned that I really wanted nothing to do with journalism or media or the news. It just wasn't something that interested me really, but I loved it as a major. I loved learning about it, but it never went anywhere.
Well, that explains it, because I've always noticed that you're very articulate when you speak. There are no extra words and you're always very on point. Well, then how did you end up in this gig, design?
So my father was an architect. So I grew up in a very modern home that was built on a mountain in Vermont. It was all glass in front facing the Green Mountains of Vermont. And it was very cutting edge at that time. I was the girl who had the cool house. Everyone would want to come over and see my house that my father designed and built. So it was just part of, you know, our household was interesting design and architecture, and I was on job sites all the time. He did both commercial and residential. So sawdust and specs and blueprints, those were things that were just a part of my everyday life. It wasn't an industry I thought I would get into, but it was part of my upbringing. So what really happened was I moved to Los Angeles. I mean, I don't want to bore anyone to death, but I moved to Los Angeles and one thing led to another and I became a makeup artist. And I loved color. I loved experimenting. I loved the creativity of makeup. I thought it was somewhat of a sexy industry to be in. And I did well in it. I had no experience whatsoever. I had literally never picked up a makeup brush, but I got a job as a makeup girl behind the counter at Saks Fifth Avenue and Barney's on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles. And I did that for a couple of years. I then moved to New York just because I wanted to live in New York City. I knew that from a really young age, I wanted to live in New York City. And I continued to be a makeup artist for many years.
You're like a bag of surprises. I did not know that either.
I had this idea. I was working behind the makeup counter and I kept seeing women come up to the makeup counter and buying lots of makeup, hundreds of dollars worth of makeup, and just saying, what am I supposed to do when I get home? How do I put this makeup on when I get home? And I thought, I think there's a business here. I think, what if I became like a personal makeup shopper or a personal makeup artist? This was before YouTube, you know, before these tutorials that were at everyone's fingertips. No one had any guidelines of how to do their own makeup. And so I started a business that was called Chic to Chic. Mm-hmm. And I got attention immediately. New York Magazine wrote about me. The New York Times wrote about me. I started this business that really took off very quickly, where I had a ton of clients who would hire me to hold their hand and walk them through Barney's and Saks and handpick their makeup from different brands and teach them how to do their makeup. And it really became a little business of mine. And from there, I got a lot of media attention. A lot of magazines wrote about it. And I was on a lot of television shows and talk shows kind of as a beauty expert. Yeah, that kind of went on for quite a few years.
Wow. I am shocked and just so impressed. I could see already that that's the genesis of your current business.
Yeah, it's funny. In the back of my mind, I knew the makeup job couldn't last me a long time. I knew that I couldn't do this for the rest of my life. I really wanted to experience a different career. So I gave myself one more year. I said, I'm going to go all out for 1 year. And so I kind of pounded the pavement and I got an agent. And that agent sent me on an audition for a reality show that was a spinoff of a show called Say Yes to the Dress, which I think probably everyone listening has heard of. And in that show, it was a spinoff with one of the characters from Say Yes to the Dress, but this time they needed an on-camera makeup artist and an on-camera hair person. And so they held auditions and I got it. I was on this television show for a year, this reality show, and it was kind of my last hurrah. It was really fun. It was really exciting. It was pretty easy for me. It was just the perfect job for me. And it was my last push in this industry that I knew I had to leave. And in the back of my head, I was thinking, well, what am I going to do next?
Why did you think that you had to leave? Like, what was the reason for knowing that you needed to leave?
That's a great question. It was a few things. At this point, YouTube was starting to really come onto the scene. And the people who were really getting the big contracts with the makeup companies were what we now know as influencers. And I just didn't have it in me to play that game. I didn't have it in me. I tried a YouTube channel and I tried to kind of keep up with the Joneses in the makeup world. But the truth was, I didn't have the interest. I didn't have the passion. I didn't have the patience. I just knew it was coming to a close, that I had gone as far as I wanted to go in the industry of beauty. And I needed something else. And I think I knew, even though I couldn't admit it, I knew I wanted that to be something having to do with interior design. Mm. I just always loved furniture and objects and art and fabrics and color. I always was drawn to that stuff, whether I was sitting in a restaurant or in someone's home or just shopping myself. I thought, I think I really want to go into interior design. The problem was I had not a clue. I mean, I knew nothing. I had no skill. I had no plan. I can't stress this enough. There was not a plan to be had.
So then how did you go from that to actually opening up a business? Tell me that journey.
So two things happened. I did makeup for a lot of weddings. And one of the weddings I did, the bride was an interior designer. And when I found that out, just in chatting with her, I love interior design. What's that like? We became friends. And I was bemoaning one day to her that I really think I needed to stop doing makeup. And she said, well, why don't you come into my office a couple days a week during your slow time and you can shadow us. You can kind of check out and see if you like what we do. I mean, it was really just a friendly offer. We were, like I said, we were friends. It wasn't anything formal, but I suppose I was an intern, I guess, for a couple of days a week. And so I went into their office and they've done some big restaurants in the city and they've done some beautiful homes. And I watched them and I played with their fabrics and I started going to the showrooms and I just started listening and watching and trying to pick up on little tidbits to just get a handle on even things like, how do you do your bookkeeping, or where are the showrooms located in the middle of New York City? I mean, I knew nothing, absolutely nothing. At the same time, I decided to hire a coach, like a business coach, to sort of mentally guide me through this transition. Because I, like I said, I really didn't know where it was going. I was just putting one foot in front of the other because financially I still had the makeup career to keep me afloat. So I had the luxury of making money while I was doing makeup and still exploring a new career. I didn't have to quit a job. So the business coach, one day she said to me, you know, if you want to be an interior designer, let's just talk about I don't know, your elevator pitch, kind of like, let's just get a couple sentences together about how you might introduce yourself to someone brand new. It was just a silly exercise. So we were talking about it and she said, you know, I have a kitchen in my house. She lived in a loft in sort of near the Flatiron. Mm-hmm. She said, I have a kitchen and we have been banging our heads against a wall trying to figure out how to renovate this kitchen. We've got some tricky spots. We can't quite figure it out. What if as an exercise, you pitched me a new kitchen? You kind of put a little deck together, gave me some ideas. It might just be like a fun exercise for you. Mm. So I did. I put together a sort of a simple deck to how I thought the floor plan of the kitchen might better serve her needs. And she hired me.
Oh.
She basically
said
to me, okay, I'm going to hire you to the kitchen. Very quickly, I was her client and she said, let's stop that. And now I'm your client. Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
That is hilarious. That's
awesome. I did her kitchen. Yeah.
Was that your first real project, would you say?
Yeah, that was my first real project. I charged her pennies on the dollar. Okay. And so I was doing this kitchen with her and really, if I may be perfectly honest, I didn't really have any idea what I was doing, but I did know how I wanted it to look. I was very, very clear on how I wanted it to look. And I was very, I would say I had a knack for being able to, you know, pick out tile or paint and hardware and things that are in a kitchen. That came relatively easy to me. Finding someone to make the cabinets and understanding what a contractor does and understanding how to charge and understanding timelines and leads and all of that stuff, that all happened on the spot. So as this was happening, I was still sort of interning at my friend's office. And these two things were kind of happening simultaneously, I would say, for about 6 months. And I was doing makeup and, it was all kind of happening in one big swirl of chaos.
So you were enjoying all of this chaos or were you afraid, nervous? How were you feeling?
I was really excited to start design. I felt like this was probably what I needed to be doing. So I was energized by the design. I was anxious to end the makeup or to phase it out. But mm-hmm. I would say for a year or two, I was genuinely doing both. The next client was another bride who I had known who had recently married someone and they had just bought a townhouse in the West Village. And I was pretty forward and I reached out to her and I said, I know you bought this townhouse. I don't know if you have an interior designer, but I'm starting to do this in addition to makeup. Would you ever be interested in letting me help you? And she said, we have this, you know, a lot of townhouses have this sort of parlor level that it can have many purposes. And she said, we have this kind of basement area. We don't know what to do with it. What if you tackled that room? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And I ended up doing most of the townhouse. I mean, to this day, she's still one of my favorite clients.
Oh.
I might note that the client who hired me the first time was without question my hardest client I've ever had.
No way. The business.
My first two clients were my most difficult and my easiest. And I learned probably more from that than anything else.
Oh, what did you learn?
I learned there is a dance that happens when you hire an interior designer or anyone really creative, where we as the interior designer want to be trusted. We want to be able to have our vision come to life. Truthfully, that shorthand is we want you to let us do what we do best. Give us your home. Let us design it. We're going to give it back to you. And that is a very difficult relationship to achieve. It's taken me years to do it. And I think that very first client who was really, really difficult really helped me understand what was necessary to try to create that balance.
Mm, that's a very good point. Very good point.
Yeah, it was a really, really hard lesson to learn. It was a very difficult situation, but I'm so happy it happened at the beginning of my career.
Absolutely. Just managing that kind of dynamic is critical.
I can only speak as an interior designer, but if you are an interior designer and you have a really difficult client, the best thing you can do for yourself is learn from that. It's so hard. It is so heartbreaking. It is so anxiety-producing to have a difficult client and a hard relationship. But you really start to develop good boundaries. And you can really, if you're really savvy about it, you can shape your business to set yourself up for success in the future. But you need that kind of horrible experience to have that happen.
Oh, 100% agree. You know, we had a little bit of a chat about this before, but based on what you just said, one of the questions I wanted to ask you is how do you balance your taste with their taste? And what do you do to manage that?
It might sound counterintuitive and not the direct path, but one thing I was always really passionate about is making sure I got good photographs of every project. Because I knew I needed to collect my work in something tangible. It is the most important thing I could have done for myself. I put a lot of money into the photographers. I did a lot of research. I made sure that our final product looked as good as it could look at that time in my career. Because I knew that once I had a collection of work, I could lean on that. I could refer to that as when a potential client came to me, I could say, this is the work that we do. This is the work. If you like this work, this is the work you're going to get in the future. And so that kept growing. The bigger projects that we did, the bigger photographers I'd hire, the more money I spent on it, the more I could say, here's the work we've done in the past. If you like it, the only way you're going to get something like that again is to allow me to do it. If you start to water down my design, if you start to try and manage me, if you start to say no to a lot of things, that's okay, but you're not going to get one of the projects you so seem to love that's on my website or on my social media or something like that. And honestly, that's like your bargaining chip, is if you want what I do, then you have to let me do what I do. And I mean, it's one of the foundations of how I work and who I am.
It's so smart to specify that right up front before they get into it. It's like your rules of engagement.
Yeah, it took me a really long time. I mean, listen, it's not been smooth sailing always, but it is something I've held very close to my heart from the beginning. But it's not a straight road. It never is if you're an entrepreneur. It never is if you're a creative or a business owner. It's always going to be a ball of yarn. But over time, every client gets a little bit different. We hone and sharpen our communication and our process. And now it's a we. Now it's not just me. It's more than just me that's on the team. And so we have all sorts of tips and tricks up our sleeve to try to communicate that from the very, very first point of communication with potential clients so that we're set up for success. And they do get the best of us. The fact of the matter is, I really believe that every project we're doing is better than the one we just did. It just gets better and better and better. And the more the clients trust us, the house is going to be that much more beautiful.
If you were to describe in words your design aesthetic or your design philosophy, how would you describe it?
My sweet spot is textiles. I think one of our strongest suits is taking lots of different fabrics and patterns and meshing them all together to create something that's really cozy and warm. We tend to use more natural elements like leather and rattan. You're not going to get glass and chrome from us. Even if it's something that's a little bit more of a modern project, we're going to try to find something that's warm about it. Almost all of our clients have young children or it's children in their life, maybe their grandchildren. We have to have something that's very livable, something that's easygoing, something that can withstand mess. Yeah, it's still a home, you know, but we try to make it like as close to a kind of a magazine photographable project as much as possible, but warm and cozy and inviting, but interesting, you know, something unexpected.
Do you feel like that style has changed over the years, evolved over the years, or has it remained pretty consistent?
I think anyone gets trapped in doing what they know. You know, it's hard to break your own boundaries. I'm always going to be drawn to a certain look. And all of our vendors at the same time are producing new collections a few times a year, right? So we are also receiving new items and new collections too. So that's helping us to grow as well. But I would say my general aesthetic has stayed the same. I'd like to think that we've grown a lot. I certainly look back on old projects and think, would I have done anything different? Or what would I change? And I mean, I don't like to live in that space, but I think my look has deepened, but I don't think it's changed.
It's interesting that you told me your father's an architect and there's something innate about design and art. Do you think that you've had these skills all along? Did you pick it up along the way? Do you think it's genetic? Where do you think you pick up this skill?
I think that there's definitely a knack for anyone that's creative. I think it doesn't matter whether you're throwing pottery or whether you're painting or you're a fashion designer, or even if you just happen to dress really well yourself. If you have like a creative bent, there has to be something in you that is just drawn to having a creative outlet. And by extension, an end product, whether it's, like I said, you've built a house or you've put an outfit together or you've painted a little picture. I think anyone who works in a creative field has to have, a little bit of an innate ability to create. It doesn't matter what that is. I think for me, I just love color. I love ambiance. I love lighting. I love mood. All of those things were true in makeup and they're true in design. They're not nearly as far off as I thought they were going to be. So I think I have a knack. And then there's a tremendous amount of skill to running a business, managing people, managing expectations, managing timelines. That stuff just comes with owning a business. And I think there's not a business owner out there that would disagree with me.
Well, let me hold on that business. I have a pile of questions about that. But, you know, if you were to look at your younger self, what do you think she would say about where you ended up? Is this expected? Do you think it's not surprising? What shocked you as far as where you ended up? Is there a shock?
And I have never thought about that before. When I was really little, I wanted to be a singer and an actor and a dancer. I was quite a little performer. And that was really, really, really my passion. I went to theater camp and all that fun stuff. So I don't think she would be all surprised that I'm doing something that's consumer facing, if you will, and mm-hmm. something that's creative. My father is actually no longer alive. And I wish so badly that he knew I did this. He died while I was still a makeup artist. I wish he could see this. But I think maybe, I don't know, young Rachel would probably not be that surprised. That's a good question. Certainly, it's not surprising I'm running my own business. Both my parents had their own businesses.
Well, so your father was an architect. Your mother ran a business.
My mother was a lawyer, but she had her own firm. And I've never had a boss ever in my life. So I don't know.
that's a badge of honor.
It was innate in me. I knew I had to work for myself.
Now, I have a lot of questions about a female founder of a business, running a business, operating leader. What surprised you about running a business? What do you think are the toughest parts of your job?
I think what's hard about my business is the same as it was in makeup and also with other friends I have who run businesses. You're constantly, constantly evolving, always trying to think of ways, you can call it marketing, just ways of growing, ways of systematically making yourself more efficient, how to get the end result you want, how to communicate your thoughts. And the thing about a business is the fact of the matter is it's always your fault. Even if something goes awry with a client or a project, it's so easy to blame someone else. But the truth is you have to blame yourself. You have to look at the business and figure out what did we do wrong? How can we improve it? And the thing is, when you set out to be an interior designer or anything else creative, that's not what you're thinking. You're thinking, I just want to create this thing. I want to create a beautiful house. I want to create a beautiful room. You're not thinking like, oh, how am I going to order that sofa and deal with the fact that it showed up in the wrong color? And whose fault is that? I mean, the problems are just endless, endless. And I didn't realize how hard that call be. It can be really challenging and overwhelming.
What skills have you learned or mastered that surprised you? Like, you're really good at it now, but you didn't think you would be good at it. You know, a lot of people I talk about the financial aspect of it, how they really don't like that.
You gotta
part.
Make money. You know what? The amount of things you have to do to own a business, workers' comp and paid family leave and business insurance, and you can be sued at any given day. I mean, these things no one told me about. I mean, you know, I didn't know that how to do payroll. I didn't know how to pay myself. You know, how much should I keep for myself? I didn't know how much to pay other people. I mean, all of that stuff is, you just have to learn as you go. And I have a lot of friends who own their own businesses. I was pretty intentional about creating a couple friendship with other interior designers. We all have the exact same problems. We all have the exact same issues. Mm-hmm. So to have that soft landing spot with other like-minded creative business owners is pretty valuable, and it makes it all a little bit easier. But from the other side, I still I marvel sometimes at the fact that when we are installing a project that we did it. How did we produce this furniture for an 8,000 square foot house? Like, I don't even know how we did it, but we do it. And I'm really proud.
It feels good at the end of a project.
Yeah, it's pretty satisfying.
Is there one thing, if you could do over in your business or in your career, that you would?
If I really start to think about what I wish I did differently, I probably will drive myself crazy. I try not to, not intentionally, but I don't really let my mind go there. I will say this. I'm a big believer in coaches. business coaches, executive coaches. Mm-hmm. I think it doesn't matter how well you think your business is doing. I think they are instrumental in helping you solve a problem or hone in on a certain skill. I know that at different points in my business, I have needed different things from those coaches. I've probably worked with 5 at this point.
Wow.
I had one coach who really taught taking massive action. This idea that whatever it is you want, you have to take massive action to get it. Whether it's finding a partner in your life, whether it's opening a business, whether it's getting in shape, you have to take the massive action. If you take massive action, it doesn't really ever stop. And so when I was coached during that, I reached out to everyone. I had more cups of coffee with architects and builders and landscape architects and professional organizers and real estate brokers. I mean, hundreds. I would reach out and say, can I introduce myself? Can we have a cup of coffee? Can we Zoom? Can I introduce myself to you? And I just took massive action. And somewhere, somehow, something is going to happen for you because the action is massive. By the very token of you knowing that you're going to cast this wide net, you're going to keep going, something has to come back to you. Some architect is going to say, you know what? We have a new project right now and they need a designer and I want to introduce you. Something's going to happen, right? That was really helpful. I wish I took massive action sooner. Of course, there's always things I wish I could have done sooner. I wish I had hired someone sooner. I wish I had maybe spent a little more time with social media. All these things I could say, but I don't think that would be very healthy to look at because here we are, you know.
That's an excellent segue to my next question, because you're giving them a very valuable piece of advice to listeners out there, which is taking massive action and finding your coach. How do you find your coach?
You know, like I said, I've worked with a few. It all depends on what it is you need at the time in your business. Right now, I just finished with my latest coach. We worked together for 4 months, and he is someone who works only with interior designers, and he really got my pricing straightened out. We really worked very hard on structuring my pricing and understanding what I'm worth and how to communicate that with the client and all sorts of things having to do with numbers. It was very numbers heavy. That's what I needed at that time. And so I had done some research and I had heard about this person in the back of my head. I had kept him filed away. There have been other times where I've really needed some help with marketing and I found a coach to help me with that. Or, you know, I think once you start to know what you need, that person can make themselves available to you.
Oh, that's an excellent point. Are these engagements with coaches, how long do they usually last?
They're all different lengths of time. Like I said, this last guy was 16 weeks and it was intense and they're expensive and they're not generally fun. That's okay. You have to kind of have a little pain, a little squeeze sometimes in your business to really shake things up. If I'm the boss, I need someone I can talk to who knows more than me at all times. And if I have to be the expert in the office, if I have to be the person who's supposed to have the answers, I have to be able to have someone outside of my organization, outside of me and my head to help me get a hold of things. And with design, there's the soft skills of how to actually design and how to source and how to put a room together and how to present to your clients. There's the marketing of how to get the business. And then there's all of the money. I mean, the fact is the money's a really big part of it. And if you're not careful, you're going to easily squander that away because you can get really focused on your relationship with the client or the relationship with the job, and you kind of end up giving a lot of yourself away financially, and that's a hard place to get out of.
That's another excellent piece of advice.
Yeah, the money needs to be talked about more, I think, actually.
Yeah.
I think the money is a really tough part about running a business, and you typically need an expert to really help you structure that. I think especially with women, we leave money on the table like it's nothing. It is just so common for us to not charge enough, say, oh, you know, I was going to charge this, but I'll take my price down for you. I'm so sorry. Do you mind paying this bill? Here's your invoice. Could you please just pop a check in the mail? I mean, we are so polite about money. It's awful. I catch myself in it all the time.
I'm guilty of it. Guilty.
Grappling with this. Yes.
I'm constantly struggling with myself. I'm the same.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you struggle with?
Oh, sorry. Like it kind of ties with the ownership issue. Like if something goes wrong, I feel very responsible. So I go, okay, well, maybe we should do like a price cut, or, you know, that sort of apologetic attitude about money, which men don't usually have.
I haven't met one yet. I have to say, I have yet to meet.
They don't. Usually.
Yeah.
And I've worked with men all my life. But
me
women
too.
Do. Women, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I have not seen a man use the word money and sorry in the same sentence.
Never. Yeah, women do it all the time. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, we leave a lot of money on the table. And on top of leaving money on the table, we're not getting the same amount of money in the dollar anyway. So it's a double whammy. And then you scratch your head when you don't know why you're not making what you think you should. Or you add that up and you put yourself in this position of imposter syndrome. So not only am I not asking for the money, I don't even think I'm worth the money because I'm faking this whole thing anyways. And it really can mess with your business. And you have to really have your wits about you when it comes to the financial aspect of your business. And I think we've gotten there. I think we have arrived at that spot, which is, I will take an exhale for now. I think that's where we are for now.
Oh, it's so good. What I hear you say and how you present yourself, extremely confident, very strong in the best ways. And your clients are senior executives of their company. So you're doing something right.
Well, you know, I am strong and I am self-assured, but I'm also an absolute puppy dog and feel, you know, it's a mix. It's a constant battle inside of me. You know, I want the women who work for me to be happy. I want them to be creatively fulfilled. I want my clients to like me. I want to do good work. I mean, all of these things are swirling around in my head at all times. But I'll tell you this, as silly as it might sound, if you get that financial structure set up, I really kind of think the rest falls into place.
Yeah.
There are so many people out there who are really good at what they do and they're not charging enough and they're not going to do well because they're not making the money they can to survive. And for every person out there who's charging too much, there's someone who's not that good at their job, but they're still making the money. I don't know. That sounds kind of garbled. But the point is, I think it's like a very good foundation to set yourself up with a very strong financial constitution of your business, mm-hmm. because then the work has a nice soft spot to land on. I know that's it right. might sound counterintuitive, but I really believe that to be true.
And then you could enjoy it more.
You can enjoy it more and you're getting paid to do it.
Exactly. Rather than the dread of it all.
I still dread it. I still dread it. Listen, I still, when I give my pricing out, now I'm not the one that does it. I have someone who does it for me and that makes a big difference. But when the email goes out, yeah, there's a, ooh, oh my gosh, what are they going to say?
There's a dread. There's a fear.
Yeah,
a little
sure.
bit.
But we don't negotiate. So it's, for the most part, this is who we are. And I have to be confident the phone's going to ring, that if this client isn't into this, these numbers or how we work, I have to believe that they weren't the right client for us.
All right. So switching gears, what project are you most proud of? And is there a dream project that you would love to do?
This is going to sound really silly, but every project that we are working on is my favorite project. I really get obsessed with our projects. I love them so much. And then when we install them and when we photograph them, I put them to bed. That's it. So right now, my favorite projects are the ones I'm working on. And I think this often, but I really love what we're doing. I'm really, really proud of maybe 5 projects that are just finishing up and being photographed. And I think it's our best work so far. I hope that I think that about our future projects. In terms of something that would be fun to do, obviously a little boutique hotel, I think is everyone's dream. We've never done a beach house, believe it or not. We just are starting a house in Florida. It's not on the beach, but still. I've never done like a beachy house with that kind of vibe. There's so many, you know, there's just so many projects, but it's truthfully about the client too. It really, really is. It's a really intimate relationship. We're dealing with their money, their family, their home. These are the 3 biggest things in someone's life. And we get invited into their home on a wing and a prayer for the most part. And that relationship is so tender and so vulnerable that I'm much more interested in that relationship than I am and how sexy the project is, because I know we can make their house look beautiful, but I have to have that relationship be really fruitful. I mean, listen, this is my second career. I'm not going to waste time with it not being anything but.
You know, as I hear you talk about the choices you've made and the different careers you've held, the one word that keeps coming to mind is courage. You have the courage to go for it, but you do it in a very methodical way with doing the right kinds of research, talking to the right people. You're doing it in a very smart, methodical way, but it's a lot of courage to dive in.
Oh, it so doesn't feel that way. So I really appreciate you saying that. It doesn't feel courageous at all. I guess that must go back to my parents both being business owners and just, mm-hmm. you know, you do what you know. We know this, right? So I saw two people run their own businesses from as far back as I can remember. So that was already in my DNA. I think it's courageous to work for corporate America. See, I look at it the other way. I think, oh, someone who wakes up and goes and works for a big giant company every day, that to me feels courageous.
That was my life for many years. It's a different kind of courage. I call it endurance.
You know, I think you have to like, there's got to be something about business owners who, I know this to be true for myself, there's got to be a thrill in the chase.
Yes, agreed.
As awful as it is when the phone isn't ringing, which happens, it happens to everyone.
Of course.
The phone doesn't ring, you think you're never going to work again. There's a thrill in that. There's got to be this like tiny thrill because when the phone does ring, it feels like such an achievement. You to be a business owner, you have to hate and love that at the same time. You have to. I think I have that.
Oh, you said that so beautifully. Anybody who's a business owner will know exactly what you're talking about. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I have some very good friends who are business owners. And I think we all share that thrill. You can call it a drive, you can call it courage, but there is something titillating and sexy about this idea that you're like achieving the next project, achieving the next sale, achieving being published. It's within your reach. And that dance, that it's somewhat dangerous and anxiety producing, it's also very thrilling. And I will probably listen back to this and go, what on earth are you talking about? But it's kind of like innately, I think, in entrepreneurs.
So I think naturally you have the genetic code, you've got the gray matter from your parents, but you follow your passion and you go through the different evolutions. And with the courage, you've been building businesses and being your own boss. What a success story. I know this is a journey, life is long, and you may have your third or fourth act, but this is such an achievement. You should be very proud. I'm inspired by you.
Thank you. That's so sweet. It's really hard to see it in yourself. I think there's this big idea when you start a business of having a business plan or having some sort of marketing plan or having a 5-year goal. I have admittedly had none of that. Not a single plan, not a single goal. I really just put when I thought it was time to hire someone, I hired someone. When I thought it was time to get an office, I got an office. When I was ready to get published, I tried to get published. You know, I kind of take it as it comes. I don't know if that's advice that is worthy of everyone, but it's what works for me. And you kind of take it as it comes, and it served me well.
But I think your idea about reaching out to other experts, it's a critical thing.
It's a critical thing. Having experts in your field, not even in your field, but people who know business, people who are, their career is, their literal job is to coach other people through their business.
Such an important piece of advice.
It's really important. And having friends in your industry is amazing to be able to call up and say, oh my gosh, I have this kitchen. I don't know what to do. Does this look okay? Am I nuts? Oh, this person won't pay their invoice. What do I do? You know, all that stuff is really nice to have. And I have a couple of really lovely girlfriends who serve that purpose for me.
Now, is there a third career that you're thinking about? You don't have to tell me, but if this is your thing...
No, I will say I'd like to buy a house or build a house. I'd like to build a house.
Oh, interesting.
I'd like to buy a house, like something outside of New York and maybe flip it. I want to do something in that world where I've got my hands really dirty on my own project.
Nice.
That is something I feel pretty passionate about that I want to have happen. That's kind of about as far as it goes. I just know I'm ready to really create something that I can be both the judge and the jury. And that hasn't happened yet. So
not yet. You're still in the thrill stage of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know who else is very proud of you? Your dad. He's looking down and he's really proud.
I wish so badly he could. I think he'd be really tickled that this is where I ended up. We have very different styles. He was very modern, but he would have found that to be very interesting.
Rachel, such a pleasure. I enjoy this conversation beyond words.
Aww. Yeah,
it's just so wonderful. And you give such sound advice. You're real, you're genuine, you're straightforward, strong woman. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It doesn't feel that way all the time. So it's so nice to, we forget how other people see us. And it's so nice to meet other like-minded women. Yourself. It's so nice.
I love meeting strong women who have taken the, you know, taken their passions and made it happen with good old fashioned hard work. So you've gone into the stratosphere. You're soaring, and you should be very proud.
Thank you, Grace.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Grace.